Welcome to the Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, I am joined by Michael Edwin and Justin Daniel. They co-authored a book. It's titled Let Down, A History of America's Failed Public School System. I really appreciate Mike and Justin coming on the show. If you're a fan of the Kelly Patrick Show, I ask that you please send some referrals the way of my sponsors.
Tim Gar here. The title sponsor of the show is Louisville Combat Academy, located at 7908 Beulah Church Road, Louisville, Kentucky, 40228. They have a great MMA program, offer 10 planted no-gi jiu-jitsu, female-friendly classes, and a great kids program. Check out Louisville Combat Academy. Kelly is there kickboxing every Thursday at 6:30 p.m. and for MMA sparring on Sundays at 5 p.m. Both classes are led by BJ Ferguson, who in 2023, for obvious reasons, won the Everything contest for most handsome MMA fighter on the planet. Come out and join Kelly for a class. Veercast Digital Media at veercastdigitalmedia.com. Matt McCarthy runs Veercast and is also the producer for the Kelly Patrick Show. They do video production, aerial drone photography, web design, and podcast production. Contact them at info@veercast.com to start your own video show or podcast. Kelly's health insurance practice in Louisville, Kentucky. Kelly is an independent broker and he loves referrals for anyone in the United States who needs help with Medicare supplements, Advantage plans, and Part D drug plans. Kelly can also always help with life insurance, long-term care insurance, and group health insurance. Contact Kelly anytime via call or text 502-386-0978.
Welcome to the Kelly Patrick Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. In today's episode, I am joined by Michael Edwin and Justin Daniel. They recently co-authored a book, Let Down, A History of America's Failed Public School System. Mike, Justin, before we jump into the details of the book, if it's all right, if you could introduce yourselves to the Kelly Patrick Show audience, what's a little bit of your backstory, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Michael, and I was a public school educator for the majority of my adult life, teacher in social studies, so I did history, geography, economics, world history, all of it, and did that in the traditional public school for almost 20 years. Right now, I'm in a little bit of a different position. I work at an adult charter high school, and I serve more in a role of a counselor, but, you know, there or where I am now, I've been in the school system for 20 plus years now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Justin, and I am a non-traditional teacher. I actually started my career in the business world. I got a degree in marketing, worked in sales and marketing for about 5 years, and then decided that I wanted to go back to school. Got a master's degree in education and started teaching. I've been in and out of education in various different roles in the classroom support side for about 15 years now. And kind of similar to Mike, social studies certified, have taught a wide variety of classes there, and then also have a business endorsement too on my license. So I've taught business courses at the high school level as well. And yeah, somewhere along the way, you know, Mike and I got together and started to kind of share our stories about what we've seen in the classroom in our time, and decided to venture out into some advocacy and dabbled in some writing, and then that led to the book.
Okay. Mike, is there anything, how would you summarize, how did this book come about?
Really, it came about because, you know, just being in it every day for as long as we were in it, and Justin and I actually, we ended up teaching right next door to one another for a number of years. We had the classrooms adjoining. And, you know, we found ourselves banging our heads against the wall with the same problems over and over. And it was just student disengagement. And, you know, we would confer, we'd spend time before school, after school, how can we fix it? What's the next method we should try? You know, what's the new pedagogic trend? We'd always go through that. They always come out with those, you know, every 5-10 years, ways that they're going to revolutionize education. And we tried it and we tried it and we tried our own things. And what we found is we were just getting the same results over and over and over. Students were bored. They were disengaged. They weren't buying what we were selling. And, you know, we eventually began to question, well, maybe there's something else here. Maybe there's something systemic there, you know, here. And I don't even remember the exact day where we, you know, kind of crossed that line, but we started digging a little bit. And what we found was the history of a system that really was never intended to educate. It was intended to indoctrinate. It was intended to direct students rather than let them freely explore. And once we found that out, I mean, it was really eye-opening because everything that we had been experiencing in the classroom, all of a sudden we had answers to. It all started to make sense. And, you know, we originally started podcasting about it and then decided, you know, we have enough material here. Let's go ahead and put it in book form.
So the system you're referring to that was created not to educate necessarily, that doesn't happen to be the system that's still in place, does it?
Justin?
It's alive and well. It is alive and well. It's kicking for sure. And like Mike said, you know, it's gone through a lot of iterations. Politicians, you know, have their hands in the pot of this. And, you know, they're the creators. They're the genesis of this, right? I mean, we traced it all the way back to Horace Mann, who some people may know through early U.S. history as kind of the quote-unquote godfather of this system. And so if you give the government the ability to be able to dictate, and we always refer to it as compulsory mandated schooling, you know, then you can't expect them to not, you know, again, pull the strings, make, you know, laws related to curriculum or how teachers should teach. And a lot of my colleagues would complain about that. And a lot of times I just have to say, but this is the system that you're advocating for, you know, whether you like what, you know, there's an R or a D next to a politician's name, they're in control of this, right? And so, you know, when Mike talked about kind of pointing back to that thing that we realized this is what is causing this, I think that's really kind of the root of it all.
If you were, let's imagine a scenario where each of you were to have children and you needed to choose how to educate them going forward, starting in 2025. Tell me about what you what types of decisions you would make, perhaps even versus decisions you did make in the past, that type of thing. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as far as a system of education, I think I may even retell this story somewhere in the book. It's been a couple of years since we actually completed it, but there a number of years ago when my kids were really little, we went over to a friend's house. He invited us over because they had a pool and his kids knew how to swim. They would jump in the water. They would swim freely. They had no problem with it. And my kids didn't, you know, one, because we live in Indiana, and two, because we didn't happen to have a pool. So they didn't know how to swim. So they were kind of confined to the walls. And they were young at the time. I think they were 5 and 3 or 6 and 4. And they just asked me, they said, can we learn how to swim? I mean, it was very organic. This was something that they desired, and it was a skill that they desired, something that they had observed and then wanted to learn themselves. You know, children are like this. They're exploratory. And so what I did is I just went out and I researched different options, came across this one place that was offering lessons. And I spoke to one of the girls there who would give the lesson. She asked me, what is it that you desire? And I said, well, I want my kids to be able to jump into the middle of a pool and at least survive it, be able to get themselves off to the side. And, you know, she said, we can do that in 5 or 6 lessons, 30 minutes a piece. We negotiated a price. And the point is, in that situation, we were really negotiating and determining what we wanted to learn, how much we wanted to learn, you know. And after the 5 or 6 lessons, whenever it was complete, I was satisfied with what had happened. Now, we could have continued to go on and learn more, but we don't have a pool or an ocean near us, so I didn't think that that was satisfactory. But really, that we were just determining how we wanted to get educated in that skill. And if I were to choose how I could educate my kids going forward, it would be on kind of that a la carte basis, you know, where you see something that you want somebody to learn, and then you negotiate with the supplier, you determine exactly what you want to learn. If you want to learn further, then, you know, you can pay and go ahead and learn. But it's like, it would exist like any other service exists in the United States. It just wouldn't be dominated by the government. It would be completely free market.
Justin, anything you'd like to add to that, Justin?
Yeah, I would echo that. I think we kind of both are in agreement and alignment that all learning is organic. You know, when you look at how kids learn from an early age, learn to crawl, learn to walk, learn to talk, you know, there's no set of mandated standards that are given to a parent to say, this is the manual for how to teach your child how to do these things. You know, it is very natural, and there's setbacks and there's struggles, and you overcome those naturally without pressures of, you know, you got to meet certain standards or things of that nature. So, yeah, I would just kind of echo what Mike has to say in terms of organic, letting it happen naturally, allowing control, you know, having say so in what is learned. And I know you might mention that story being in the book. I know something else that we talk about in the book as well is this kind of jumbled up, there's no rhyme or reason to the way in which courses are laid out. For example, once you start getting to the middle school, high school levels where there's, you know, a set curriculum of math, science, language arts. And then as you get more towards the high school level, you know, you've got some electives that are thrown in there, but the state mandates, you know, for example, all seniors have to take economics and government. And it's like, well, maybe some kids are ready for that their sophomore year. Maybe some don't care to want to learn that while they're in high school. Maybe they're out of high school before they learn about that. We both have said many times that we've learned more about history in our adult lives beyond the classes that we took even in college, because we've matured and we've been able to kind of pick and choose what we want to read through. So yeah, just kind of summary, you know, what Mike said, it's really just all about freedom, right? The freedom to be able to choose your destiny and your path about what you want to learn and how.
Does it sound like both of you would support the abolition of public schools?
Well, I would say that we would support the abolition of the laws that mandate compulsory education. Wait, Justin, do you think that's fair?
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've wrestled with a lot, right, as we've gone through, because we've certainly put a lot of time and stock into deconstructing what is there. And then I know Mike does a fantastic job of kind of always grounding me into, hey, we've got to think about solutions though, right? We can't just always be deconstructing. We have to think about, if we're going to bring this message to the table, what would we have, you know, what to offer? And I think, I think that anything that would, you know, look, public schools could exist without the force compulsion aspect to it.
So everybody gets to pay for it. The taxpayers still get to pay for it.
Right. Well, that's great. And that's the thing that we have both said too along the way is that, you know, if you're a parent, you know, in a community and you're happy with your local school, you're happy with the way that things are set up and running, and you want to pay into that system, fantastic. Mike, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but kind of this idea of what's been debated, at least up here in our state a lot, is like the money follows the child, right? Mm. So, you know, that kind of, to your point, Kelly, what you were saying of like, if I make the decision to withdraw my kids from my local school and they want to go to a charter school or a private school or homeschool or whatever it is, those tax dollars that would be used, you know, for my, you know, piece of the pie or of the pot, I would retain to be able to select that, you know, mode of education that would work best for my family and ultimately for my children. So,
yeah. And I think, to answer your question a little more directly, I think the public schools would crumble on their own. Like once a free market, like a side-by-side free market option existed, I don't think it would be too long before the finances for the public schools became untenable. And then really just what they were offering and the results that they produce, I think on its own over time, we would see it fall apart. So all rather than say, I suppose we support, you know, eliminating public school system, I support a process where it can eliminate itself based on, you know, what the public is choosing.
Yeah.
Would you both describe yourselves as libertarians?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, part of our story of kind of, you know, getting to know each other and working in the building together was we both probably have had similar kind of conversions into libertarianism, coming from more of like the social conservative side. And then, you know, I know we kind of talked about this story before in some of our podcasts, so I won't go through all of it. But yeah, I mean, Mike kind of put me on to Mises and, you know, then we kind of stumbled into Phi. We wrote a lot for Phi for a while. And so, yeah, I had no clue. You know, I was kind of that dyed in the wool, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, you know, in the early 2000s, post 9/11, I was like, rah, 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 go get them, USA, USA. And then, yeah, you know, we just kind of started, he introduced me to some stuff. I started digging deeper and I was like, my eyes were just open. You know, it literally was like a conversion of faith to kind of seeing more clearly, you know, the role that the government had been playing that I was really quite blind to. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that had certainly kind of helped steer me, at least on my part, into kind of wanting to move away from government mandated directed education.
Yeah. And I had kind of a similar conversion process, like in the early 2000s, like you said, Justin. I mean, I was a neocon through and through, and I could repeat every line that you wanted me to. And I would repeat every line. And, you know, after 08, when they nominated, the Republican Party nominated McCain, and 12 when it was Romney, you know, I began to think, well, these people aren't serious about anything that they claim to be serious about. And, you know, I have to disassociate myself with them. Like they're obviously not small government, even though they convinced me for enough years that they were. And I kind of, you know, was in no man's land for a little bit until I came across some libertarian writing. I had bought a book a number of years back by Tom Woods, and I just kept it as like a history resource, but I kind of like went back into that because there were a few things that I like, and that's kind of where I got onto Rothbard and Mises. And that's about the time that Justin and I met. And, you know, when you read that, you know, somebody who is like really actually, you know, we care about liberty. I felt like, you know, we had politically at least had a home, you know, again. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our conversion process.
Sounded like you guys, your solution sounded very libertarian oriented.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was no core. I did not beat Justin into it.
Yeah, that's right.
When I write the description for this episode, I will be sure to include, if you guys could send me actually, your proper, most educated sounding title. So I will put that in the description. Okay. Then hopefully we will have some people who are pro teachers be like, oh, look, Kelly had some public school teachers on. Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Then hopefully they listen to this point. What would you like to say? What would you like to say to those people who, heck, they might not even be libertarians?
Justin?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Being in public school right now, and I try to listen a lot, right? And then slowly try to drop little kernels of truth. And it's so funny because when Mike and I have had these conversations, and we've talked to several other people as well, what's really funny is, you know, kind of the dyed in the wool, what you would think of as like just the kind of average, you know, public school teacher, right? We would probably agree on a lot of what is wrong in education, right? I mean, you know, they'll say like, yeah, you know, the kids can't read, they can't write, they can't do math. But then like, and so then it gets to that point of like, okay, well, what do we do about it? And then it just like 180s away from what we're trying to propose and what they're trying to propose. And so, you know, I guess I just always try to appeal to the because I think most people have this innate understanding of freedom. Now, I do think that, and we've talked about the fact that freedom is very difficult. It's hard to live a life of freedom, right? Because it requires a lot of discipline. We've talked ad nauseum about how we feel like there's a lot of people that like being told what to do. They want to have mandates. I mean, we saw that during COVID, right? I mean, look how quickly people folded into following along with, you know, government mandates. And then if you didn't, you had, you know what to pay for it. But yeah, you know, that's what I always try to do is just try to drop those like little grains of truth. You know, it's like, I'm a practicing Christian and I try not to beat people over the head with my faith, right? If I go in and I'm thumping my Bible and I'm trying to, you know, hellfire and brimstone, that's not going to win anybody over, right? So I just try to lead out my life, you know, in the example that I think is best, that reflects the type of lifestyle that I am hoping other people would live reciprocally. And yeah, you know, that's what I just try to do is just try to get people to embrace that, that kind of same sense of personal freedom, autonomy, as it comes to choosing the type of life you want to live, which at the cornerstone of that is how you're educated.
Yeah. You know, when I have discussions with people who are leftists or liberals, and we have a lot of them because we work in public education, one of the first things I do is I try to find common ground, because there's always, you know, like somewhere where we can start, like, let's see what we agree on first. And in education, we can usually agree, and I don't get a lot of pushback here, that the results are at least poor. And if you can get people to concede that point, then you're off to a good start. And we put out the results in the book. And one of the things we paid special attention to in the book is to put the results of the groups that the educational statists say that we need the system for. In other words, they'll say that we have to have public education for the underrepresented minority groups in the inner city. We have to have it. Okay. What we did is we took the data on how they are reading, how they're doing math, what their scores are, and we just put it forward. And you can ask the question, is this working? Like, you know, do these numbers suggest that what you're advocating for is working? And I would just kind of say that if I was talking to somebody, you know, like, can you back these numbers up? Because they're really poor. You know, if you look at fourth, I think one of the data points that we put in the book towards the end, fourth grade reading scores for Black Americans are close to 20%. Like one in five is proficient in fourth grade. And the numbers actually go down the more time they spend in school. Like as they test them in eighth and then 12th, the numbers get worse, which tends to show that the longer they spend in the system, the worse that it's getting. And so if you just kind of hit data points and say, can we at least agree that it's not working? Then they'll be a little bit more receptive to, you know, what you're about to say, which a lot of the times will put them out of a job and then they tune you out. You know, that's not what they want to hear.
I believe Thomas Sowell has written extensively about these types of topics.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he has.
What have you taken away from Thomas Sowell? I believe he was a poor kid raised in Harlem, if I remember correctly. So he had some firsthand account. What are your thoughts on Thomas Sowell? What have you learned from him regarding this?
He was unbelievable. He actually, he influenced a chapter that we have on how African-American students are performing now. We use, I forget the name of the piece that he wrote, but it's titled in that chapter. But anyway, he talks about the M School. It's now called the Dunbar School in Washington, D.C. And he goes back to the turn of the century. So it was like 1899 or 1900. And he said in D.C. at the time, there were four public high schools. The M School, which was African-American only, scored, three of the schools were white and only one of them was for Black students. The M School scored better than two of the white schools. So he said prior to the government sticking their hand, and this was largely what we see in the 1960s and going forward, sticking their hand in the education pot there and saying, we got this, we are going to take care of, you know, underprivileged, underserved, groups, and we are going to take their education and push it forward. He says, since then, the data shows that it's all gotten worse. You know, it's got, and Thomas Sowell is one of those where he just lays out the facts before you. He's not super opinionated. In fact, when you read his books, you don't really even get opinion. It's just him laying out the facts. And that was one of the key points that he was able to show, that things have only gotten worse since the government has gotten their hand in it, especially for students of color. Justin, do you want to?
I had a gentleman who connected with me on Facebook who bought our book, and we've messaged back and forth a couple of times. And one of the first things that he sent in a message to me was, I love this line that you included from Sowell where he says, if I go to the doctor and they tell me I have cancer and they're going to remove it, they don't ask, what do you want me to replace it with? You know, I think we included that in the book as a line. And, you know, it's kind of like that wit that he brings about, very influential. I mean, just obviously one of those wise souls that we could learn a lot from by listening to and reading through more. Just really phenomenal mind. Just to read what he went through. It's pretty amazing.
And to that point, we do get asked a lot, like, if, okay, so if we were to get rid of the public education system, what would you replace it with? Like, people say that. And, you know, that's really not even a fair question to ask, because we're not the ones who need to answer that. The market will answer that in due time. You know, we're not going to give the answer for what 7-8 billion people are going to act and do, but those questions will get answered. They always have, when market forces are left to act as they should. Mm-hmm.
So if someone, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, if someone were to hear you and say, what about the poorest kids in the inner city here in Louisville, Kentucky, where Kelly Patrick, where I'm located, Kelly Patrick Show headquarters, we'll say, there's some rough, you know, rough areas where kids need public schools. You guys don't care about those kids? Is that what you're saying?
No, I would say buy the book and read the last chapter, because we answer that question. So I won't give away too much, but it's the same thing where we just take data points, and we hear this a lot. You know, the poorest of the poor will suffer if you get rid of public education. If you get rid of public education, there's only going to be private education left, and the only people who are going to be able to pay for that are the rich kids. So this system is going to decimate the poor people, and it's going to be great for the rich kids. And I ask the same question, okay, how is this system working for poor students? And would you take people from the same racial demographic, you take them from the same community, the same upbringing, the only difference is their income levels, and then you look at how they do in the schools? Poor students consistently underperform in the public school system. All right. So the system is not serving them. And I think it's at least reasonable to discuss an alternative. Justin, what would you say to that?
Yeah. And I would say that, not to be like too overdramatic about it, but it's borderline criminal what the public school system does to a lot of inner city kids. I mean, when you look at these stories that are coming out of places like Baltimore, where they're pushing through kids and claiming 100% graduation rate. And, you know, there were kids that never showed up for a day of class, more or less, that they are now coming back out. And I think there's been several cases in the last 10 years where families have tried to sue the school district from basically like the equivalent of malpractice, really, because, you know, it's like, how did my child get all the way to this point where you claim that they're a quote unquote graduate, and now they can't fill out a job application because they can't write, they can't read, they have no skills that translate into being able to perform any duties, tasks in a, you know, 9-to-5 job. Again, that's just perpetuating that cycle of poverty. And we kind of illustrate that too in the book as well, right? So this is like a big ripple effect, with education kind of being the stone that hits the water. And then, you know, when kids aren't educated properly, when they don't have the skills that they need to be able to, you know, to live their life out in a fruitful way, then that ripples into communities, right? That's when drugs and crime and, you know, other violence come in. And then it just kind of keeps, you know, snowballing in other areas. So yeah, you know, that's kind of what I would say to the devil's advocate argument is, like, you know, look, and then I think, again, what makes it even worse is a lot of these politicians who live in those wealthy communities, live in the suburbs, our businessmen, our politicians. It's so funny. There's a guy that I follow pretty closely, Mike, I know you know him as well, Corey DeAngelis, who is outspoken on, you know, he goes after the labor unions and that kind of thing.
Pretty school choice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, he's very, very quick to always point out the people who are advocating for this system of keeping kids locked into these schools that are failing, that they are the ones that went to public or private school, right? They're the ones that, you know, they got to benefit from school choice, but yet they don't want, you know, other people's kids being able to benefit from that as well, which is kind of the hypocrisy behind it all.
Yeah. They demand public schools for the other kids, right?
Like, that's right.
Not for ours, but for, you know, for the others. So.
Well, guys,
I was just going to throw in there one other thing real quickly. You know, another prominent story that is told in the book is we actually interviewed a gentleman who was very, what would you say, Mike? I mean, he's pretty hardcore liberal. He was in San Francisco for a while and wanted his son to be able to go to a different public school within I believe the greater Minneapolis area.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. And was denied. And then his eyes were kind of open and we interviewed him and heard his story. And he was like, this is insane. Like, there's no reason that my son shouldn't be able to have some bit of choice or freedom.
So he was saying he could have driven his son to school 20 minutes away.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wasn't demanding the bus pick him up. He was saying he could him there. And they wouldn't allow it.
They said no.
That's right. Opened his eyes as to like, what kind of bullshit rule?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And like Justin said, I mean, he's a hardcore liberal and I think he probably still is, but he did notice, like, you know, once he was faced with it, that there is something wrong and there's something corrupt about the system and the way that it operates.
Would you guys say you are big fans of teachers' unions?
I wouldn't say that.
No.
Well, and I would say that's the one silver lining in our state is we're right to work, so we're not mandated to have to join teachers union. And so I kind of politely sit through the opening day speech from our labor union representatives, but always kind of file the paperwork away in my desk somewhere.
And, you know, I really wouldn't mind them if they didn't just outright lie to everybody's face. And we know that they're lying when they claim, I mean, they'll stand up and they'll say with the utmost urgency that it's about the kids. It's about the kids. It's about the kids. And when you get down to brass tacks, it is about their job and nothing else. And this is how they've always operated. So, you know, just come out and say that and I'd have a lot more respect for you. But everything that they say is about the kids. And then everything they do is about keeping their job without any regard for the kids and whether they're learning, whether they're engaging in critical thinking, whether or not they're acquiring skills to be successful in the real world. When it comes down to it, that stuff is all secondary to these people. They want the public school system to operate as a jobs program for them. And when they demand more money, they're just demanding more pay for themselves. But you know, they say another thing, and that's the thing I find most, you know, obnoxious about it.
Why does that bother you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just an irritated guy, I guess.
Yeah. You need to loosen up. I mean, you just need to look past that.
You know, the other thing too about that real quickly before we move on is, you know, they're also, I think, one of the biggest proponents of this ideology of the quote unquote, our children. They're our children. We hear this rhetoric coming from them a lot. It's like, no, they're not our children. Like, you know, the kids who come into my classroom every day are students. I try to teach them and mentor them, but I have no father figure obligation to raise them in the community. And so I really get frustrated with some of my colleagues in the building when they start kind of throwing that mantra around. We've seen an increase in the school being a community center. The local media in our city was up in arms over the summer when the state announced that they were cutting the free lunch programs over the summertime, not like free and reduced lunch during school. This was just like a program that started during COVID where they were feeding kids throughout the course of the summer, and they announce like, well, we don't have any more money for that. And it's like, well, yeah, it's amazing when it's other people's money and they run out of it, right? Like, something's got to be done. And so they cut that, and these people are just like, where are the kids going to eat? You know, these bleeding heart type things. And it's like, you know, there's other things in society. There's food pantries, there's, you know, community organizations, there's other solutions besides the local school being a food bank as well.
Who do you guys think is the best messenger for libertarian thought in 2025?
I've been reading Hornberger a lot.
Okay.
And I
really enjoyed an episode he did with Bob Murphy recently, and it was about the he's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, which platform was it on? Was it on the Bob Murphy Show?
It was on the Bob Murphy Show. And it was about immigration.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, he probably does, of the people that I read, and I do read a lot of economists, he probably does more on education than anybody else. And I really like the stuff that he writes about it. In fact, he was one of the early authors that kind of turned me into the libertarian in education that I am today, because he was one of the first people that actually suggested that you could argue against the current system of public education. When I was a young teacher, this just wasn't even anything that I could have imagined. I didn't know that you were allowed to, you know, question the 8-hour school day in the public school system. I just thought it was part of life, you know, like the air that you breathe. You just go to school and that was it, and questioning it was not something that you did. So he's been pretty influential. I don't know, Justin, who would you, anybody else that, I mean, Murphy also, like he's done a lot.
Yeah, Murphy and Woods were kind of, you know, as far as like a popular, I think, entry for me into, not to say that they're not academic in any way, shape, or form, but I think they've been able to kind of popularize the message of libertarianism through their shows, the Tom
Woods
Show.
And they have the academic credentials. I know sounds silly to say that matters, but
you know, like I mentioned earlier, Corey DeAngelis does a great job. There's a lady that had I connected with through Fee, Carrie McDonald, who does some excellent work on micro schooling and homeschooling, school choice. She just recently published a book. I connect with her quite a bit and follow her journey. I would say, you know, those are probably the big ones as far as like legacy, kind of maybe like controversial on some things, but, you know, I really like, Friedman. You know, his Free to Choose series still stands up today. And I use that a lot, in
the actual the actual TV series. You use it when teaching?
Yeah, we've used some episodes with that. I've got a copy of the book too.
What year was the first episode of that? Did it come out? Do you know?
Gosh, Mike, what would you 80? Say? Mid 70s? Late 70s, 80s?
I think it was 80. 79 or 80, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
When we taught econ, we used to use that pretty frequently. Those were good ones.
Yeah.
I'd like to throw in Murray Rothbard wrote one of his most, I think, underappreciated books. I mean, he wrote so many books, but he wrote Education Free and Compulsory, and that's where like a lot of my knowledge of where the history of compulsory education came from that book. And that was, it's kind of like one of the unsung books. Like, he did so many, you know, big ones and so many good ones. This is one that just kind of, I feel like he wrote it in 15 minutes and then just, you know, kind of threw it to the side. But that was a great one. If people are looking for something to read, it's Murray Rothbard's Education Free and Compulsory. It's a great read.
Well, and I would say just strictly on the education side, and I'm ashamed of myself for even not this just immediately blurting out of my mouth, John Taylor Gatto. Oh, yeah. I mean, he was so inspirational, Dumbing Us Down, Weapons of Mass Instruction. I know, Mike, you probably as well, leaned a lot on his stuff. I can't tell you how many times I read and listened to the audiobook of both of those books. They were just so influential. I think it's so easy to connect with him, being that he was a former school teacher in New York City. He was Teacher of the Year, both I think in the city and the state.
Yep.
So I mean, he came with the credentials of going through the system, and kind of took that reflexive look, kind of the same awakening of like, just this can't be the best way to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a big influence too for me. It was his essay, I think it was called "I Quit." I think, where he resigned. But yeah, he resigned as the New York Teacher of the Year, as the New York City Teacher of the Year, and just took a look at what he was doing every day. And he said, "This is not the best thing for kids. In fact, it's one of the worst things." Mm-hmm. And when you asked me early on in the show, like what kind of spurred it, it was one of those moments, you know, where you just kind of look back at what we're doing and you look at the kids and how they're responding, like how they're re-engaging with you. And you say, this isn't it, you know, like this is not education. This is just like prison.
Well, Mike and Justin, guys, I appreciate you coming on the show. Before we wrap things up, do you have any, I don't know, social media plugs or anything you'd like to mention before we start to wrap things up?
I am probably not on any social media all. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, like nothing. I think I have a MySpace from like 1998, but I don't know if it's still active or not. So I'll have to check that out. Somebody can message me there.
I do have a decent following on Facebook. If you just search my name, Justin Spears, I think the actual handle might be at Justin Spears with the number 4. And I am on X, formerly Twitter, as well. I've kind of backed off a little bit of what I've done over there, kind of mostly stuck to the Facebook side of stuff. And then, of course, our book is available through Journal of Van Publishing, so GVV Publishing Company, and it's seeded out through Amazon.com as well there.
Great stuff. Well, Michael, Edwin, and Justin, Daniel, guys, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate you. Once again, the name of the book is Let Down, A History of America's Failed Public School System. Mike, Justin, thank you guys very much.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.